This is the M2M Podcast, a production of the Market to Market TV show and Iowa PBS. I'm Paul Yeager. This week, we go west. We're going to talk about onions and other crops that are grown in the Idaho and Oregon region with Shea Myers. As we had a conversation with him, he'd already been back and forth across the border several times that day, but he has a company that's a family-run operation, the family farm. And when he started back in 2006, he says, yeah, I made some mistakes. He had his eyes opened, which he's glad that he was able to make some mistakes. He did take business classes at Boise State University, but there's nothing that any instructor taught that compares to what's happened since March with COVID-19 and the coronavirus. So we discuss how things have changed with him, how sensitive the onion crop is, where his business goes, how vertical integration has worked, and also bit him a bit in this business. Kind of a double-edged sword there. He thought he was diversified, but it's proven to maybe not be the case. But we talk about how things have shifted here as the cuts to normal are dramatic. And we'll hear how long he thinks it is going to take before normal, put quotes around that word, return. And we also find out if agriculture is the canary in the coal mine when it comes to the economy. We'll find out in this installment of the M2M Podcast. Here's Shea Myers. All right, Shay, where are you sitting right now?
Yeah, I'm just in my pickup above one of our asparagus and onion fields, actually. Both right here off to my left.
So where exactly is that, though? We're in Idaho, right?
Yeah. So I'm in Oregon.
Oh, you're in Oregon today.
But we farm on both sides. Yeah, we're crisscross all day long. So I started my morning out at the marketing and sales office where the packing shed is in Idaho, which is, I don't know, as the crow flies, about a mile that way. In this area, we just go back and forth all the time.
You said asparagus. I know your hat says some other things, but tell me what all these crops that you're involved with.
Sure. Yeah. So, on our family operation, our farming operation, we're growing, 7 to 9 crops. Kind of depends on the year, what we're doing. The ones that are our standard bears that we have every year would be, asparagus, onions, sweet potatoes, and then we'll have some of the staple crops. We'll have winter wheat, we'll have corn. In this case, this year we have a lot of corn because of some rotational issues. We are dabbling in the hemp market. We played relatively big last year, but that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day. But a very challenging market that had way more volatility than we planned on. Then we'll do mint. We do a sizable amount of mint for, to feed our distillery. So we run a mint distillery to make mint oil, essentially essential oils that are used in flavoring and soaps and toothpaste and things like that. Chewing gum.
So you said family operation. So is this the, farm you grew up in?
I did. I grew up right here. Yep.
So has it always been 7 to 9 crops as long as you can remember, or how has that changed over time?
Pretty close. My grandfather was always, I mean, certainly not in the very beginning, but for many, many years, he and my uncle had a very diverse number of crops that they grew. The valley that we live in and that we farm in here in the Treasure Valley, right in the, like, that's in the Snake River Basin, close to Boise, Idaho. This is actually one of the second most biodiverse county is just across the river in Idaho, as far as the number of crops that can be grown based on the climate that we have here. So we can grow everything from, they're even doing some testing on some almonds and pistachios in this area. Leafy greens are pretty easy to grow here from, you know, the day length that we have, although not the same quality that they would in Salinas. And everything else from, you know, apples, obviously, and pears and all the stone fruit and everything else. It's just a really, really cool place. In fact, there's even some fig trees in the valley, you know, a limited number of them. So yeah, we can do a lot of stuff here.
So what would you say is which crop do you know the most? Do you know the most?
Onions, hands down onions.
Yeah. Is that one that most people know the best and everything else is kind of ancillary?
In this particular valley, yes, largely. Onions are really our go-to. You know, you hear of certain parts of Idaho, and Idaho's famous for potatoes. But in this part of Idaho and Oregon, right here in this valley, farming is really based around onions.
How hard's an onion to grow?
I guess that depends on how much experience somebody has and how much generational experience has been passed down to them. The varieties have improved over the years. I mean, I would say in some ways it's easier, the yields are higher. When we have someone new come to the valley, they just thinks, you know, and sees what everybody else is doing. They're like, well, they're growing onions. I've got to grow onions. It's a pretty steep learning curve, but I don't know that that's a lot different than most vegetable crops. I don't think there's a lot of vegetable crops that you just put in the ground and, you know, they just grow.
Yeah. Say, voila, here they are.
Yeah. Here they are. Yeah. No effort needed.
A couple of weeks ago when I was working on a story, I came across you, you know, just a couple of connections, and you have a YouTube channel with some things, and you were trying to explain some onions and some onion situations. What happened in March that just flat out upended everything that you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, the shutdowns with COVID, the shutdowns at the restaurant level, the sporting venues, schools and colleges, in our industry, that's called the food service industry. And there's really three segments to the market for onions and really for a lot of produce items. You have food service, you have processing, and you have retail. And initially the impact obviously on food service was dramatic. It was sudden. We lost probably 95% of that market. And really, we've probably only gotten 25% of it back today. I mean, we're still 75% below normal on that food service segment. And that, again, relates to the fact that people are, you know, not eating out, not even close to the same level that they were before. And then the processors are kind of ancillary to that. They're the suppliers also. They take that same onion that sometimes is maybe consumed fresh at a restaurant. There's also onions that are consumed that are pre-processed. Think of maybe like a fajita mix, you know, in a quick serve restaurant or something like that. And so those guys have also been impacted. And as the restaurant shut down, as food service shut down, all of a sudden we have hundreds of millions of pounds of produce with really no secondary home, because while we can handle some fluctuations, you know, 30, 60, 90 day shutdowns are not really anything that can quickly be adjusted for.
One of your videos, they can't stay in the field very long. Certain things can, onions cannot. What's the big problem that if they hang in the ground or above the ground after harvested, what happens?
Yeah, for simplicity, I'll just talk about the summer variety onions, intermediate day varieties. And that's what's being grown in Southern California right now. It's what's covering most of the supply for the United States. Those onions, once they're mature, I mean, I think everyone will understand this with the tomato. So I'll use a tomato for a second. When you get a tomato and it turns red, or a banana is even better at your house, you put that on the counter. Once it starts to get those little black speckles, you got to use it within a certain amount of time, or make banana bread or throw it away. That's your options. And onions are the same way, not to the extent that a banana is, but you have a window of time that you can harvest, sell, utilize, process that onion. And if you don't, it's going to go to waste. And so when the supply chain has these fluctuations and these absolute losses to certain segments, those onions get out of cycle, and they have to be destroyed or wasted.
How long of a time are we talking here? What's that window?
This time of year, probably 3 weeks tops. I mean, that's all you're talking about is 3 weeks. The 3 week fluctuations, the difference between whether something's usable or will go to waste.
I live off of Interstate 80, and I see semi load after load during certain times of year. I know those onions are coming from you. Where do some of the onions you grow, where do they end up? I mean, I know you said food service processing and retail, but do you know where some of the end products end up?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, those that maybe the one of the most nationally recognized brands that could touch everyone in the U.S. would be maybe HelloFresh. If you get those, you know, pre-batched boxes that have, you know, a recipe, if there's an onion in there, there's a really good chance that that's our onion, regardless of what state you're in. A lot of the restaurants, I'm trying to think of some of them that we're specifically in. I mean, Golden Corral. I know that we're in a lot of those. Retail, we're in Albertsons, Walmart, Winco, principally in the southern and southeastern states. And we do get up to New York, but we tend to be more in the food service sector when we're up there. So that's been more interrupted. And it's a little bit harder to talk about specific names and brands when we get to the Northeast, because we don't do a lot of retail at those locations.
How did those markets develop for you? Where did those connections get made that you're able to spread so far?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been at this from, my mother started with asparagus. I'll give her the credit that she deserves on that. She started almost 21 years ago with asparagus. Asparagus was really, initially we grew it for canning. There was the free trade agreement that was a lot like NAFTA that occurred in 1992. It was a free trade agreement with Peru. And all of the canning operations were from the U.S. moved to Peru, and we lost that market. And so my mom and grandfather and my uncle decided, okay, well, we have all this crop. We need to try and figure out how to fresh pack it. And everybody thought we were crazy. And frankly, we probably were to some extent. But we went to market with that. And that's really like the first time that we learned as a business that we could pack, sell, and vertically integrate ourselves, follow our crop a little bit farther, and maybe retain some of that value within the business itself. So that was Albertsons, was one of the first retailers that we sold to. And that's how that started. And that opened a little door. When we started onions, we thought it'd be the same way. We're like, well, we're already doing asparagus. We'll get in the door. It didn't really work that way. It's like anything. It's incremental improvements, small efforts that you make on a consistent basis. We're a little bit unique in that a lot of packing operations, and a packing operation is someone who takes a fresh vegetable that's usually delivered to them and convert it to a package for retail or food service. Many, many, many of those people that are packers are not farmers. And so we're a little bit unique in that we do the farming, the packing, and the marketing. And so we were able to adjust and cater to our customers and the retailers and everyone in a way that was not completely unique, but rare enough that, you know, one door would open and then the next door would open and the next door would open after that. And people got to a point where they felt like they could confide and trust in what we were doing, and we could execute on a level that made them feel comfortable. And so that's, you know, the process. Sometimes you look back and you're like, wow, you know, how do we have all of this or all these opportunities? But if you take enough time to really think through it, you realize that it was a very, very, very slow process.
And most of that's from since 1992 is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't start doing fresh pack onions. You know, we didn't start packing our own onions until 2006.
Okay.
So on the onion side, all of that happened since 2006. And then on the asparagus since the early 90s.
The onion, the fresh pack there and using the processing on your own facility. What was the thought there in 2006 to try that model?
So my family were already onion growers. In 2006, there's a couple of reasons. One, I came back from college. They're like, hey, this kid can, we'll throw him to the wolves and see if he can get this figured out. So they had someone that didn't necessarily fit in the farming role, or they didn't need specifically on the farm. So they had the person, and then they had the idea. And again, already being onion growers, it just made sense that if we packed and marketed and sold our own product, that we could get it done. And we had the asparagus model to kind of fall back on as proof of concept. And that's how it went down.
What was your 2006? You came back from college. Where'd you go?
I was at Boise State.
What'd you study there?
I majored in Spanish with a business minor, actually. Yeah. I'm a Spanish lit.
What's your favorite Spanish story in Spanish literature?
There is one by Borges that is an Argentine writer, and it's called, I believe the translation is Eyed Wise Open. Very, very interesting story that at the end kind of has you scratching your head. Eyes Wide Open.
Did you feel that way in 2007 when you kind of got going back on the farm?
You know, I didn't even know enough to be scared when I got started. I was too naive to be scared then. I mean, I look back now and we wouldn't be here if the, you know, farmers take risks all the time, calculated risks. You know, so I really have to give family a lot of kudos for taking that risk and allowing me to make a lot of mistakes, because I made a lot of mistakes. I mean, hopefully I've learned something along the way, and certainly I know that I have. I'll continue to make mistakes, but I made some significant ones in the beginning.
Do you think that with 7 to 9 different crops and all these different venues, this is one of those that protects you from market fluctuations one way or another? Let's talk before March of 2020.
Yeah, onions are the best way to put it. We've got, let's call it 7 crops for right now. Onions represent almost 70% of our gross sales. So it's a significant portion of what we're doing. And there's risks as you're less diversified. So you could say we're very diversified from a crop standpoint, but if you look at that from a gross dollar standpoint, we're not as diversified as it looks. We felt pretty good about where we were and the aspect that, like I said, that we're a vertically integrated farming operation, that we're controlling everything as far through the process as we possibly can. We even went so far as to start hull peeling, doing some processing on our own of our onions in 2019 and expanding that even more into 2020. And so, I mean, while all of those decisions and business practices are kind of up in the air and we have to think through and more critically about what we're doing, I think they're all advantageous, you know, to try and have that control. So we've always felt like we can see the market fluctuations. Let's look at a commodity crop. You know, I mean, if you're talking corn or wheat or whatever it might be, you're completely at the mercy of what the market does there. You can't really pivot or change or adjust to do much to change what your return to the farm is. But when you're doing something like with onions, and we sell and pack and do all the things that we do, you're self-insured in some ways. You're diversified. You have different types of customers. So like, for example, we have retail and food service. So even though we've lost a lot of the food service business, the retail business has obviously been a little bit better, right? That's one of those ideas of where we have this control that is beyond just the pure value of the commodity, if that makes sense. Hopefully that does.
So instead of it going to, say, an Applebee's with your product, it ended up maybe more went to Albertsons to help stock their shelves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, tit for tat, you know, I mean, exactly the same amount, but it still helped. You know, it's better than if we were just food service and we would be sitting here having lost 75-80% of our entire market share and not be able to do anything.
All right. We're about week 10 since this has really kind of all started. What has week 10 taught you differently than week 1?
Well, I think the difference now is week 1 was, okay, this is kind of a pain. This is annoying. This is going to hurt for a while. Week 10 is hunkering down and preparing for the long term. If we're talking about agriculture, I mean, long-term is different relative to who you're talking to. So let me put that in perspective. At week 1, we might've been worried about the next 6 months. Week 10, I'm worried about the next 18 to 24 months. The challenge is not going to go away, at least in our segment of agriculture, until, at best case scenario, this time next year. That's best case scenario. And it easily could go another 12 months after that. And that's either the demand side, things improve, the economy starts back or has started back up, consumption habits get back to where they were, or enough from the supply side, enough things have happened on the supply side that there's fewer onions available. And those of us that are still active and participating start to see returns that make sense.
You said your minor was business. Did they cover this in business school at all?
No. Yeah. Yeah. I think I could have had my MBA and not really been prepared for this, for sure.
I had a discussion with
an economist in Arkansas early on in this discussion. And I said, this is really all you're going to do for the rest of your life, isn't it? He goes, yeah. I mean, this is real time, trying to understand how supply and demand is changing better than any simulator could ever do, and nor would anybody want to do. My gosh, this would be
right.
Doctoral level stuff, if not triple doctorate, or if there was such a thing. Do you see 12 months from now, the next 12 months, what's going to be the most painful? I mean, you kind of talk about there's certain things. Have you put the crop in, the onions into the ground? I mean, and do you go, well, maybe I don't plant, or maybe I do hit one of those other crops as a way to get me by?
Yeah. I mean, the problem with onions and what we call storage crops in the United States, so the onions, potatoes are really probably the biggest two crops like that. And the problem with that is we plant in mid-March to mid-April. All of our crop is planted. And that's why we've made our bed for at least a year, because we planted now in March and April. We'll harvest in September and October. And with those onions, from September, we will supply the U.S. market until mid-May of 2021. So there's really no adjusting or pivoting. It's survival. What are we going to do? Sometimes when a certain commodity gets oversupplied, you figure out, okay, and it's generally not everyone at the same
right.
time. So I've got to go, I'll steal some business from competitor X for 3 months and get my way through it. And I'll be okay. Well, now if we've lost, I think arguably we've lost 40% for at least for the next 12, 18 months, we've lost 30 to 40% of our market share when it comes to onions. You can't go steal that business. You can't temporarily move things around. Like, so the dynamic has changed from how am I going to sell the crop to, I don't even know if I want to put it this way, but how can I survive the season? How can I sell enough of the crop? How can I even sell the crop, period? Because the pricing could get, look at what oil did, right? I mean, never are onions going to get in negative territory, but we can get way into the loss category and into the red where we're losing significant dollars, where the farmer makes nothing and where the packer makes nothing. Usually there's one of those two entities, one of those two parts of the business are going to make money, the farmer or the packer, hopefully both. But in this case, everyone stands to lose. And as a grower, packer, shipper, that's where the vertical integration is actually more damaging. Usually it means we're more profitable, we're more diverse, we're quicker to react, like I spoke about before. But now it means our losses are incurred on every level of the supply chain.
And then you sit there and go, well, I don't think anybody would question what you've done on a mistake. It's just absolutely out of your control.
It's absolutely out of our control. And I feel a bit like agriculture is the economic canary in the coal mine. We are the ones that had to continue functioning and operating. We're the ones that have to continue to feed and supply the market. But we're also the ones that feel, because of the true, there's nothing more pure when it comes to supply and demand than food and agriculture and perishable commodities. And so we're seeing what is happening economically right now. Because if you just happen to be working from home, or even if you're a restaurant owner, it hurts, but you still don't know what happens 3 months from now when you go back to work. Well, we've been at work this whole time, so we already know what the damage is now, and we know what the damage is for the next 9, 10, 15, 18 months, whatever that number is, easily a year. We know what the damage is already for the next year.
I want to have you give us one final lesson before we finish here, Shay. My 14-year-old was watching a video of yours with me the other day, and you were trying to explain to your YouTube audience about kind of the disruption that COVID caused when we would see piles of produce. And I think you had something about a truck down the interstate.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way that I described it was, onions have to be delivered to San Francisco. Let's use that. Oh, there's plenty of bridges that are going into the Bay, or we can use New York and talk about, one of those bridges going into Manhattan or something like that. But we'll stick with San Francisco for a second. You got to cross a bridge to get in there. And what COVID has done, it's taken out one of the many bridges that are going in and over the bay. And are there other routes? Yes, there are other ways to get your supplies there. But if you had the first truck when that bridge went down and it's sitting right on the edge of the bridge, or heaven forbid, you were on the bridge when it collapsed, that supply, that portion, those onions are lost permanently. The ones that are sitting right on the edge, they still have to backtrack however many miles to get back and reroute themselves. And then all of the processes that we had in place to deliver using that freeway, that bridge, that infrastructure, those are now gone. And so even though you can say, yes, there's other routes, it takes time to adjust, to reevaluate, and to establish the new supply chains, build the new bridges, if you will, to continue to supply the market.
You having trouble sleeping, Shay?
No, when I stress out, I sleep. That's my preferred method to deal with it.
So you're sleeping a lot. Is what you're saying.
I don't have any trouble sleeping right now. Well, I'm the opposite of some.
I hope things, you have to be in these times. If you're not an optimist, you're out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Shay, thank you so very much for your time, and greatly appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you.
My thanks to Shay Myers in this conversation from Oregon and Idaho, as he is in the Owyhee Produce Company, and he works for them. Thank you. And if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, hit us up, market to market at Iowa PBS. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.